everyone in the Diocese of Orange and elsewhere in Southern California. You are listening to Orange County Catholic Radio on AM 1000. We're coming to you through the good offices of Immaculate Heart Radio today and every Thursday morning from 11 to noon from our studios on the campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. I'm Patrick Mott. Well, if you've ever taken a trip to Rome, you've likely spent some time at the Vatican. And if you spent some time at the Vatican, you've likely seen or perhaps spoken with one of the Swiss Guard. They are the guys in the brightly colored, unmistakable uniforms who are charged with guarding the Pope. They're one of the most famous security forces in the world and one of the most ceremonial. And it's not easy to become a Swiss Guard. In many ways, it's a calling. Our first guest today is in a perfect position to address this subject because Jonathan Benaghi was himself a Swiss Guard. And if you were listening to the show a few weeks ago, you may recall us visiting with Miranda Emdy from Huntington Beach and talking about her engagement to Jonathan after a long-distance Rome-California romance. Well, they're both with us in the studio today. Jonathan is in Southern California for an extended visit and has kindly agreed to stop by and talk about his career in the Vatican. Welcome to both of you, and Jonathan, welcome to Southern California.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
First of all, let's catch our listeners up a bit. You're getting married in October in Rome, is that correct?
Yeah, okay. The plan are that.
Okay, how are the plans going?
We're working on that.
Okay.
Yes, they're progressing nicely.
Good. Well, Jonathan, what is your status with the Swiss Guard now? Are you officially retired, or are you on leave, or what's your status there?
Yes, I'm retired. I finish my service after 4 years, more than the double that normally a Swiss Guard made.
Well, usually a Swiss Guard will serve for 2 years.
2 years, yeah, because it's a service that the young Swiss men do normally between the school and the university. Mm-hmm. The school and university, or between learn a job and find a job after for the life. They take these 2 anni sabbatici, 2 years of to make another experience in another country, another city. Mm-hmm. For the most of us, in another culture, because they're coming from the German side of the Switzerland, mm-hmm. so they have to learn Italian, not only the language, but also the culture, the food, and everything.
Well, let's say, this is a big hypothetical. Let's say I want to join the Swiss Guard. Now, I can't, can I? Because I'm not Swiss.
Yeah.
You have to be Swiss.
It's one of the, a lot of thing that you have to be and to do before be a Swiss Guard. So first of all, you have to be Catholic, mm-hmm. and on that we are.
Yeah, okay.
Catholic, but it's not the case for the most part of Switzerland because the German is mostly the French side are Protestant.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic, between 20 and 30 years old at the moment that you ask to go in the Swiss Guard, have finished or the high school or learning a job.
Okay.
1 meter and 74 height, but I can't translate in feet.
5 feet, 8 inches.
Perfect, thank you. And have served the first part of the Swiss Army. That for Swiss men is a must, obligatory.
I wanted to get to that also because a lot of people here do not know this, but in Switzerland there is obligatory military service for all males in Switzerland.
Yes,
is that right?
Yep.
Okay, so you get to be what age when you have to start serving in the Swiss military?
20 years old.
Okay.
So we start with the recruiting and the test between 18 and 20, and then 20 years old start the first part of the military service that is split in more years. But the first year is 6 months training and preparing the basis of the service. That is what they need. We need also in Rome. The training that we made in Rome, the first part of our service, is just the representation, the honor service, and maybe something more particular. But all the most important thing, using weapons, fighting, the security service we learned already in Switzerland.
Is the competition fairly keen to become a Swiss Guard? Do a lot of men want to do it, or is it something fairly rare?
I think that a lot won't do that. The most of them outside Switzerland. But with all this requirement that you need to go in, the people that have all the situation correct are just that we need. So more or less 30 every year.
Do they take most of the applicants, or what percentage of the applicants would you think actually make it?
80%.
Okay.
This is height, relative height, but we made a selection before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there has to be a period of initial training once you're selected, right? You already have a military background, but now you are going to be in a very specialized situation. Do you have a time of training that here in the U.S. we would call boot camp, basic training?
Mm-hmm. This basic training we made in the Swiss Army. Mm-hmm. After there is a special basic training for the Swiss Guard, it's the first month in the Swiss Guard service, mm-hmm. just for the most important thing. And after we can tell that our training continue along the 2 years or the 4 years that we stay in the Swiss Guard. The young guard made the service, the honor service, with the old guard, so they stay, they are that you see at the entrance with mm-hmm. the elebard that don't move. Mm-hmm. And the first 6 months they do only that.
Oh, okay.
But they are near our old guard that teach them how control the entrance, how we check the people, who can is allowed to go in or not, how to recognize a cardinal, a bishop, all this stuff. And more than this, also during our free time, we have some exercise, some training in our barracks to improve the service.
That brings up a question. One of the requirements for a Swiss Guard is that you be a single man, not married. Do you live in a barrack in the Vatican altogether?
Yes. We are the Vatican Army official, so mm-hmm. we are citizen of the Vatican. And to be citizen in the Vatican, we have to work for the Vatican and live inside the wall. So we have to live in the barracks, and for place reasons, we can't be married. We have to wait a lot of time before build a family. That's possible after many years with the ranks corporal, if you have already served 3 years and if you promise to serve other 3 years. More than this, there is also, we need an apartment free. If there is not flat or house free, we have to wait before wedding.
Well, now, I want to get into a little bit of a history of the Guard here with you. I know this is a very complicated and bottomless subject here, but give us a little bit of an idea of how the Swiss Guard came about and why. It dates all the way back to, I have here, 1506.
Yes. The official birthday of the Swiss Guard is the 22nd of January of the 1506, mm-hmm. but the history begin earlier. Before that, it was already Swiss Guard by the Pope, but just for the moment where the Pope need most security during the war or other problem with the Roman people, mm-hmm. other stuff. The Swiss military, the Swiss mercenary during the Renaissance was very renowned in Europe because it was very expensive, but with a nice fidelity. So normally when they have to fight, they stay until dead. And for this reason, the Pope chose the Swiss as other king in Europe. The king of France, had a Swiss guard, the Saint-Suisse. They stayed defending the Pope during the French Revolution, and the French people can't arrest him until the last Swiss dead on Les Tuileries, the palace in France. And it was the same thing during the Sacco di Roma, when the Emperor Charles V attacked Rome mm-hmm. to take in prison the Pope. The 150 Swiss Guard stay fighting the 3,000 Lanzknecht, German soldier, mm-hmm. permitted the Pope leave the Vatican, the palace, and refuge himself in the Sant'Angelo Castle. Most of them die. 148 died at the door of St. Peter.
My goodness.
And for this fidelity, we are still there.
And you've been there since that time. It's an unbroken line.
Yeah, during the Sacco di Roma, after the death of the most of the Swiss Guard, mm-hmm. there is a little time where we were not there until the next Pope. Mm-hmm. And also during the French Revolution, when Napoleon take in prison the Pope, he let the Swiss Guard go away, but with the next Pope, he called us there. So without these two little periods, the Swiss Guard were always with the Pope.
In the next minute and a half we have here, I want to get into the Guard's uniform. Everybody loves the Guard's uniform, but there's more than one, right? Everybody thinks that you just have one uniform with the helmet and the breastplate and everything, but there are several that you wear for different occasions, yes?
That's a beautiful question because, first of all, I would like to talk a little bit about the gala uniform, the most color that everyone know, because legend want that Michelangelo draw that, and it's just a legend. And it's important to say that this year, because the 6th May of the 1915 was the first time that the Swiss Guard dressed the actual uniform. So it's a century that we dressed this uniform that was painting for the commander of the Swiss Guard, a French one, Jules Repon, that decided to draw this uniform on the old painting in the Stanze di Raffaello, that was the rooms of Jules II, the Pope that founded the Swiss Guard, and was painted for Raffaello. So not Michelangelo. And more than this, we have other uniform. A blue one is the training uniform, the working uniform that we use normally every time that we work, even if people see the other one, because it's for the representation work and the honor service. That is the most of our works during the audience or the service with the Pope.
Let me stop you right here, and we're going to get back to the rest of our uniform question when we come back. We will be back shortly with more from Jonathan Benaghi about the life of a Swiss Guard. Please stay with us.
The Orange County Catholic Newspaper is now available for weekly home delivery. The official newspaper of the Diocese of Orange seeks to illuminate and animate the journey of faith for Catholics within the Diocese of Orange. Through timely sharing of news, commentary, and feature content in an engaging, accessible, and compelling format, please call 1-877-627-7009 or visit occatholic.com to subscribe.
We are back with Jonathan Benaghi, who's talking with us about his career in the Swiss Guard. He's out here in Southern California visiting with his fiancée, Miranda Emdy, who's also with us in the studio. I want to get back for just a second to the question we had before we took a break about the uniforms. Now, you are also wearing armor on occasion. You've got a big breastplate, and the helmet is very famous. What occasions do you use the armor?
This is the big gala uniform, the most important that we have. And we dress these cuirass only 3 times in a year. This means during the blessing Urbi et Orbi, Christmas and Easter. There is an honor guard in St. Peter's Square with also the Italian army on the square. And in this case, we dress this one. And the third time is during the 6th of May, when the Swiss Guard sermon?
Inauguration.
Oh, of the Swiss Guard.
When they are sworn in.
Yeah. Thank you. And in this case, we dress this big uniform.
And the oath you take is quite an oath. You are swearing to guard the Pope with your life, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't come to that lightly.
I think that is a beautiful thing, because before do that, our chaplain of the Swiss Guard made some lesson about that, the importance of this and what that mean, because young people maybe today don't understand the meaning of an act like this one.
An oath.
And it's for the life. If I can make an example, the old commander that was in the commander of the Swiss Guard until January, Daniel Andrik, was before to become commander a soldier, before to leave the Swiss Guard and then begin a career in the Swiss police and be called back in the Vatican. So like commander, he don't made this, because he already did when he was soldier and he's still available.
Fantastic. Well, I don't want you to give away any secrets here, but it's fairly well known that the Swiss Guard are much more than a ceremonial presence in the Vatican. They're a crack security unit. They're pledged to guard the Pope with their lives. You are armed with a lot more than just the halberds out there, and you are trained as a military unit, right?
Yes, it's right. The problem is that we can't show that. The show of forces is not a must for us, because we are the first impression that people have about the Vatican and the Pope. So we have to do, it's a hard job, because we have to do a good security, but without showing our forces or the strength and be anytime kind and helpful. to the people that come.
Well, that brings me to my next question, and because in addition to your security duties, you have to be good ambassadors for the Vatican, which is how you and Miranda met. And I'm going to go over to Miranda here for a second. Tell us a little bit about how impressed you were with Jonathan when you first met, about how he related to visitors, and including yourself.
Well, I stuck around and talked to him, so I was very impressed.
you were initially asking for directions, for advice, right?
Yes. I'll never forget. That was one of the things that I was most impressed by, just the kindness, the patience. I mean, he had people speaking in four different languages, including me, in English, and so just the patience and just their demeanor. It's nothing. It's very unique. You don't see that a lot.
And because you are in that situation, I would bet that most of the Swiss Guard speak at least one other language than their own.
The official languages of the Swiss Guard is the German, so more or less every Swiss Guard has to know that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of all, we speak our native language, mm-hmm. so Italian, French, or German, and we have to learn also Italian to communicate with tourists and
sure.
Also with Italian people that have to come in the Vatican for some services.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most that need the information. So Italian now is obligatory to learn to make the most of service. If you don't want to stay 2 years, stand with a bar doing just the honor service, you have to learn another language. And then in the Vatican, with all the tourists that come, you can try to learn the other. At least some information about the museum, the basilica at the time, you can make that also in Spanish, in Portuguese, or just 2-3 sentences.
And you also almost become a de facto tour guide. If somebody wants to know some obscure fact about, say, the Sistine Chapel, you probably have to have it at your fingertips, right?
Yeah, it does. Also because where I met Miranda was at the gate, Sant'Anna Gate, so one of the most trafficked entrances in the Vatican, and it's the biggest work that we did, make a filter between people that can go in or not. And the most beautiful and elegant system to check the people, to stop the people, is be kind, give information, and satisfy the desire, the curiosities before they won't go in. So we can do our job without be too much strength.
And you have to be one of the most photographed people in Rome. Everybody wants to take a picture of the Swiss Guard, right?
Yeah, that's right. Someone like, other like less. We try. For people that go in the Vatican, you can always ask to the Swiss Guard if they want.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the chef of the place to decide if yes or not. It depends on the people, how many people are there, because normally if you begin with one, after there is 1,000 people that come, you can't work. Because first of all, we are not there to make picture. We have to work.
Right, of course. Well, one of the requirements that we talked about earlier for being a Swiss Guard is that you must be Catholic. How central a role does your faith play in your day-to-day duties with the Guard? I imagine it is all folded in to everything. It informs what you do day-to-day simply because you are working in the Vatican.
Yes, it's very important, and it's also an experience. Some of us are not straying Catholic, just Catholic, and they want to make an experience in Rome. But after the beginning, when you live inside the Vatican, you leave the liturgy also, because you're a part of the liturgy. Our mission around the Pope made you a feeling. You have a feeling inside, and people become more Catholic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, have to be the most important, I would say, motivation to go inside the Swiss Guard, because if your motivation is money, don't ask, because you can't be rich making this job.
Right. But your Catholicism really does inform the entire
yes.
job over the course of time.
We have a lot of celebration also in our guard. We have 3 only patrons, and we celebrate with a mass. We have the birthday of the Swiss Guard in January, another mass.
Mm-hmm.
The religious life in the guard is very important. We are not priests, but quite.
Well, okay, now here's a big question. How often do you get to have a few words with the Pope? I mean, you're not daily buddies, you know, you don't run into each other all the time, but I imagine once or twice you exchange a word or two?
It depends on the Pope. Mm-hmm. Now, if I think when I served under Benedict, it was a Pope, old style, if you want, more like a king, so it was close on the protocol. Mm-hmm. The Pope don't speak with the people, he just bless us. And for me, it was also enough, because you see in his eyes the contact, any way that he have with the guard. Pope Francis is more friendly, more out of the protocol, so every time that go in and out of Santa Marta, the palace where he live, he greets the guard, change just a few words, how are you, he greets us, and yeah, just a normal people. Mm-hmm. And the most contact that we have is just in the front of the apartment, where the Pope walk around or work. Mm-hmm. We can also speak a little bit. Early in the morning, the guard made the service during the night at 4 in the morning when the Pope wake up. Sometimes he spends some time with the guard speaking about everything.
I understand that the Guard has what we would call a really terrific alumni association with a kind of a once a Guard, always a Guard philosophy, that when you leave the Guard, you really stay in touch with each other over the years. Is that true?
Yes, true. First of all, because we go back in Rome a lot of time during the different years that follow the finish of the service. The friendship that the born in the Swiss Guard are very important, because we are like brother mm-hmm. in arms. And also for an administrative thing, in Switzerland we have every country, every state of Switzerland have his own association of the old guard, one for the Swiss Italian side, one for Fribourg, every big city have this Swiss Guard association. They made other honor service for our bishop. Maybe for the new bishop that blessed the cathedral or that go in place, we can do an honor service also for them.
Well, you have been a Swiss Guard for 4 years, as you say, twice the usual mm-hmm. amount of time. Are you going to miss it?
But for the moment, it's just a few months that I'm not there. So it's like a holiday. So I didn't realize that it's not my job no more. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that in the next days, in the next months, that I missed that.
Well, Miranda and Jonathan, the two of you are going to live here in Orange County after you're married. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your plans for the future. What's going to happen?
One day at a time. No, well, Jonathan is planning to move here either right before or after the wedding, so around October. And so far he likes it. We've had a lot of sunshine, so that's a good thing. He likes California.
Fantastic.
But yeah, we plan to live here, and then his family's in Switzerland, so I'm sure we'll be going back quite often to Rome and Switzerland.
Wonderful. Well, Jonathan Benaghi, thanks so much for coming down to visit with us today and for giving us such an insight into the lives of a unique and devoted group of young men. And congratulations once again to you and Miranda on your approaching wedding.
Thank you.
I know all our listeners wish you their best. When we come back, we'll learn about the plans for a new Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., and we'll hear about how you can get a preview of what the museum will be like here in Southern California. Please stay with us. County Catholic Radio. We're on the phone with Stephen Embry, who's going to tell us about the Museum of the Bible, which is scheduled to open in 2017 in Washington, D.C. He's also going to fill us in on one of the museum's traveling exhibits that is open now and will continue until the end of February 2016. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. Why a museum devoted specifically to the Bible? What was the thinking behind that?
The history of Museum of the Bible really started when our founder, Steve Green, who some may recognize, he's the president of Hobby Lobby. In 2009, he started just a small collection of biblical artifacts. And before he knew it, that collection had grown to about 40,000 items. And some people approached him about the idea of opening a museum dedicated to the history and the impact of the Bible. So they started researching that a little bit further and ultimately found a location in Washington, D.C., and things fell into place and have a very great location there. And definitely just a collaborative effort from a lot of people involved to ultimately open the museum in D.C. in 2 years.
Well, this is not going to be a small project by any stretch. The museum, I have read, is going to cover 430,000 square feet. It's going to be 8 stories tall, and it's going to be located just 2 blocks from the National Mall and 3 blocks from the Capitol. What sorts of displays and exhibits are visitors going to see there in a couple of years?
Yeah, we got a great location in Washington, D.C., like you said. Just it's actually 2 blocks south of the Air and Space Museum and 3 blocks from the Capitol. So we're kind of right there in the mix of everything in D.C. Some of the things that visitors will see when they visit the museum when we open in 2017, there's 8 floors to the museum. There's 3 main specific floors to the museum. There's an impact floor, which is going to look at just the impact that the Bible has had on the world. Hard to argue that any one text has been more impactful on the world than the Bible, and this floor will be dedicated to that. So we'll look at everything from government to fashion, just you name it. And there's going to be a section on this floor that talks about how this area of life or this area of the world has been impacted in some way by the Bible. One of the other floors of the museum is going to be the history floor. This is going to be more historical artifacts, a lot of the items from the collection that Mr. Green has amassed. So we'll have examples, we'll have fragments of the Dead Sea Scrolls. We'll just kind of show how the Bible has come to be what it is now, the history of the transmission of the Bible and how it's been translated from over time and how it really has come to be what it is today. And then the third main floor will be the narrative floor. This floor is going to look more at just the story of the Bible, the story that the Bible tells, and will be a very interactive floor. And I think a lot of kids will really enjoy this one, just exploring and learning more about story that's within the Bible.
It sounds like it's going to take its place as one of those museums on or near the mall that people can spend an entire day in or even more.
Yeah, it really is. We're working, we have a cutting-edge IT department that's working on digital companions that will actually help you sort of guide you through the exhibit so you can put in some of the areas. We'll have options where you can put in some of the things you may be more interested in and how much time you're going to have, and these digital companions will actually kind of give you a self-guided tour. The museum's just going to be so massive that you really have to spend days and days to be able to see the whole thing. So I really think that people will enjoy coming back and seeing it multiple times.
And it's not going to be just a bunch of exhibits. It's also going to support education and research as well, correct?
Right. Museum of the Bible is sort of, there's sort of 4 columns to the company as a whole. The Ultimate Museum in Washington, D.C. is just one of those pillars. We're also very dedicated to research. One of the reasons why Mr. Green started his collection, he wanted these items to be able to be studied. A lot of the artifacts that he and the Green family have purchased are now being studied by scholars across the world. And a lot of these scholars have access to these items that they never have before in the past. They've seen pictures and those sorts of things, but they've never really been able to study the artifacts because they've always been sort of under lock and key. So through the Green Scholar Initiative, which is a partnership we have with over 60 universities around the world, a lot of these artifacts are actually being able to be studied for the first time ever.
Well, let's talk about the Passages exhibit for a few minutes. This is one of the museum's traveling exhibits, and it's currently open out in Santa Clarita, outside of Los Angeles. It's going to have around 400 artifacts displayed in around 30,000 square feet, and the presentations are divided into 4 categories, and there's one called Transmission. What's that all about?
Right, yeah. So Passages is our traveling exhibit. Santa Clarita is actually the 6th city that it's been to, and
right.
The idea behind Passages was, we have this collection, it's sitting in the closet, and it's going to be a few years before the Ultimate Museum in Washington, D.C. opens, so we wanted to get it out so the public could see it. And as you mentioned, Passages is split up into 4 main sections, the first of which is Transmission. And this just refers to the way that ideas have been spread using the written form over time. So we have a lot of examples from the Green Collection within this section. We have some fragments of the Dead Sea Scrolls. At every exhibit that we do, we have a replica, a working replica of the Gutenberg press. So visitors to Passages can actually work the press and print their own piece of paper using our replica of the Gutenberg press and take that home with them.
Fantastic.
Along with that, we have a noble fragment from an original Gutenberg Bible, actually containing the entire book of Romans. So you can see that there as well. And then we have in the transmission section, we have a lunar Bible, which is the first Bible that actually went to the moon. In 1971, Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, actually traveled to the moon on Apollo 14 and carried this Bible with him. So you can actually see that there in Passages as well.
Fantastic. Well, one of the other components of the Passages exhibit is called Translation. What are people going to see there?
Right. Translation sort of examines the process of translating the Bible and how it's been translated over the years and how the Bible's been made accessible to different cultures and while still remaining true to the original text. Some of the things the visitors will see in the translation section, it sort of opens up with a cave setting where you get to interact with an animatronic of St. Jerome, who's actually living in a cave in Bethlehem, and guests can interact with him and ask him questions, and he'll tell you about why he lives in a cave and what he's doing in translating the Bible into Latin from the original Greek and Hebrew. So it's a very interactive part and one of our more kid-friendly sections of the exhibit.
Great.
Also in that section, we have a replica of the Jerusalem Chamber in Westminster Abbey. And in this section, guests will see, they can kind of overhear the New Testament committee as they discuss their final draft of the King James Bible. And also in this room, we have a first edition Great He Bible, a first edition of the King James Bible on display as well.
Well, there are two other components to the exhibit. There's impact and controversy. In the next couple of minutes, if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so briefly, the impact section just looks at how the Bible has impacted the world throughout history. So government, arts, and those sorts of things. One of the prized possessions in the impact section, we actually have the original draft of the Battle Hymn of the Republic by Julia Ward Howe. And throughout it, you can see how Julia Ward Howe calls upon the word of the Bible to capture the images that she's trying to portray in the song. So there's a lot of really neat things to see there in the impact section. And then the controversy section, this section looks more at how people have attempted to use the Bible to argue both sides of different topics, different controversial subjects throughout history. So a couple of the areas that we look into here are slavery and how people use the Bible, right or wrong, how they use the Bible to
justify it, yeah.
Both sides of the topic. We also have a section on the Holocaust, and we have a lot of Torah scrolls that were confiscated by the Nazis and actually survived the Holocaust. You can see they have burn marks and water damage and those
goodness.
Sorts of things. So, very interesting.
Well, in the time we have left here, I want to get in a few particulars for people who are interested in going out to see the Passages exhibit in Santa Clarita. If you'd like to know more about the Passages exhibit, including hours and admission fees and location, go to www.explorepassages.com or call 1-888-297-8011. I'll give you those two things again. www.explorepassages.com or call 1-888-297-8011. Also, if you'd like to know more about the Museum of the Bible in Washington, go to www.museumofthebible.org. That's museumofthebible.org to find more out about the Museum of the Bible in Washington, which is going to open in 2017. Steve Embry, many thanks once again for taking time to talk to us today.
Certainly. Thanks so much for having me.
Listeners, take in the Passages exhibit while it's here, and if you're planning a trip to Washington, D.C. in a couple of years, remember to visit the Museum of the Bible. We're going to stay on the subject of the Bible when we come back. We'll be talking to Dr. David Bibas of the California Science Center in Los Angeles, where one of the most comprehensive exhibits of the Dead Sea Scrolls ever assembled is drawing large and enthusiastic crowds. We'll be right back.
18th through May 23rd is Wills and Trusts Week in the Diocese of Orange and is proudly sponsored by the Orange Catholic Foundation and the Catholic Cemeteries. Take advantage of one of the free sessions and learn how to protect those you love with a new or updated estate plan. Through proper planning, the legacy of love and care you leave for your family and friends can be encouraging and inspiring. If you have questions on how to begin or update your estate plan, please join us at one of the many sessions planned at convenient parish locations throughout our diocese during the week of May 18th. For a complete list of locations and schedule, visit our website, orangecatholicfoundation.org. That's orangecatholicfoundation.org. Or call 714-282-3021. That's 714-282-3021. Admission is free and reservations are not necessary, but welcome. Details are available at orangecatholicfoundation.org. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Welcome back to Orange County Catholic Radio. We are joined on the phone today by Dr. David Bibas, who is a staff curator at the California Science Center in Los Angeles. The center is a fantastic place to visit. It's endlessly fascinating, and it's particularly attractive for family trips. Among the many great exhibits there now, this is the place where the Space Shuttle Endeavour is on permanent display. Today, however, we're going to talk with Dr. Bibas about a unique exhibit that's going on at the center through September 7th, the Dead Sea Scrolls. The scrolls are more than 2,000 years old and were discovered between 1947 and 1956 near Qumran on the northwestern shore of the Dead Sea. Dr. Bibas, I'm going to let you pick it up from there. Tell us about the discovery of the scrolls and why they're significant.
Well, yeah, the scrolls were discovered by a Bedouin shepherd in 1947. They were hidden in caves around the Qumran site. And in the first cave, they found seven scrolls. And some of them are pretty complete, one of which is the full scroll of Isaiah, of the prophet Isaiah.
Right.
And yes, and this one is displayed in Jerusalem in a special exhibit hall that has also other scrolls that are complete. But we have the largest collection of Dead Sea Scrolls and other period artifacts that ever mounted outside of Israel that on display at the Science Center. So guests can really get close to this 2,000-year-old artifact and discover the role of science in piecing together the story of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So we have on display selections from 10 of the Dead Sea Scrolls, including parts of the oldest known copies of the Hebrew Bible, also known as the Old Testament.
Yes.
Yeah, and over half of these scroll selections have never been before seen in the U.S., and some never been on display at all. After 3 months, the exhibit will be there for 6 months through Labor Day, but after 3 months, we have a new set of scrolls because they cannot be on display for more than 3 months at a time.
It's a traveling exhibit then, going around the country or around the world?
It is going around the country, yes. And now, in addition to the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are obviously the main feature of the exhibit, there are about 600 artifacts that really give a very rich historical and cultural context of the period of time, from the period of First Temple, going to Second Temple, and all the way to the destruction of the temple and beyond that.
Well, that brings me to this. The scrolls not only provide the second oldest written text of, as you said, most of the Hebrew Bible, what Christians call the Old Testament, but they really do offer a real insight into daily life in that era, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. Well, in terms of three types of scrolls that were found, there are the biblical scrolls, basically copies of books, and actually they found fragments for all the books in the Bible, in mm-hmm. the Hebrew Bible, except the book of the scroll of Esther.
Of Esther. That's,
yes.
Yeah.
And then you have more of the apocryphal kind of writings, and also what's known as sectarian scrolls. And these deal with the life in Qumran of the community that lived there. And they deal a lot about issues of purity and impurity,
who can join the community, people misbehave, how, you know, they are excommunicated and all of that. So it gives you really a glimpse into the life of that group in the Second Temple era.
Well, it's remarkable, I think, that visitors can walk right up to these ancient manuscripts and see them up very close and read them if they have the facility to do that. I imagine that the exhibit so far is drawing very big crowds. Is that so?
Oh, absolutely. We've been sold out every weekend since we opened on March 10th. And so it's very advisable for people to get on the website, the californiasciencecenter.org, get more information, and obviously be able to purchase tickets to the exhibit, as well as to the Jerusalem 3D, the IMAX movie that is featured and is a very good companion to the exhibit.
Can you tell us a little bit about the multimedia and the interactive approach to the exhibit?
Being a science center, we always like to, bring in the, more of the science aspect, which we did also here. So we added some hands-on exhibits to let guests explore how the tens of thousands of fragments were matched and pieced together, how they were dated, how they were deciphered and documented, and also preserved for future generations. So we have interactive experiences. One is before paper, where you get to guess if a material is parchment or papyrus. These are, most of the scrolls were written on parchment, but some of them on papyrus. So it gives you a sense of, feel what how the texture of each of these writing materials that were used. We also have an exhibit about dating the past, which explore how scientists measure the amount of carbon-14 in the leather scroll to determine the date of the manuscript. We have spectral imaging. Actually, this is a technology that was developed at JPL for NASA, but is used for the Dead Sea Scrolls. And what it makes possible is reveal text that is otherwise illegible, because they suddenly discover some new text in the manuscript that is helpful. Also, the issue of the origin of Dead Sea Scrolls and their relationship to the site of Qumran, which has been a subject of debate among archaeologists. We don't know really if these manuscripts were written in the site itself in Qumran and were hidden in the caves, and that the caves were possibly serve as libraries, or others speculate that these manuscripts were brought from Jerusalem for safekeeping in these caves, with the idea of retrieving them after the Romans were gone. But we know how that ended up, and they were then either hidden, forgotten for 2,000 years in the caves. So there is a great deal of debate about who the people who lived in Qumran were. Where they, some people speculate that they are part of the Essenes, one of the groups that lived, somewhat marginal groups that lived during the Second Temple era. And so the debate is still ongoing. They're still doing some archaeological digging in the area, and obviously probably revise the speculations based on new findings.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Dr. David Bibas. He is a staff curator at the California Science Center in Los Angeles, where currently there is an exhibit of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Doctor, you were mentioning a little earlier that, of course, there's more to the exhibition than just the scrolls themselves. There's even a section of the Western Wall and several other things that are of great interest, right?
Yes, we have a 3-ton stone from Jerusalem, from the Western Wall, that, people can touch, and we have also live feed from the Western Wall, so you can see, the 24/7 what's going on in the Western Wall. We also have limestone capitals from the First Temple period, and somewhere, between 500 BCE and 1000 BCE. We have ossuaries from early Roman period, very interesting, and a number of, coins, obviously, jewelry, weapons, and pottery that were found either on site or in other areas. There are also some artifacts that were found in Masada. which, as you know, was the last battles of the Romans and the Jewish resistance at the time.
Very famous biblical site, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the next couple of minutes that we have here, tell us about Jerusalem 3D. This is something that is going to be very fascinating to a lot of people, I think, and it's in IMAX format. Tell us about that.
Yes, and this movie provides additional cultural and historical context for the exhibition, and the guests learn about the history of Jerusalem from the ancient times to today, and also gives you a glimpse into current daily life in Jerusalem, seen through the eyes of three girls who live there from Jewish, Christian, and Muslim families. So it really immerses audiences in a cinematic journey with some really wonderful aerial photography of the old city.
And I think I remember reading that the production of this film involved flying over a what is normally a no-fly area in order to get some of the most arresting images.
That is true, yes. They received special permission from the authorities to do some really stunning aerial photography of Jerusalem in general and the old city in particular.
Well, Dr. David Bibas, thanks so much for taking time to give us a good look at what visitors are going to encounter at the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibition at the California Science Center, which is in Exposition Park in Los Angeles, right between the Coliseum and USC. Remember that the exhibit continues until September 7th, and you can reserve tickets by going online to californiasciencecenter.org. Doctor, thanks so much for being with us today. I sure appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
And that's it for another edition of Orange County Catholic Radio. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. for another hour of good talk and intriguing topics. You're tuned to Immaculate Heart Radio, AM 1000. I'm Patrick Mott.